It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Live from Minneapolis, Minnesota, inside the Mall of America on Radio Row. It's day four as we continue our Super Bowl coverage, taking you up to Patriots-Eagles in Super Bowl 52. This place is finally starting to thin out. I mean, this has been A-list star after A-list star in here today. A who's who from the world of sports, from Hall of Famers like Tim Brown. T.O. was in here again. He's not a Hall of Famer yet, but he will be, presumably, very, very soon. We also saw Mike Haynes in here again, who we'll talk to tomorrow, actually, in the huddle. To the young guys, Pat Mahomes, now the newly minted starting quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Russell Wilson, Super Bowl champion, was in here. Greg Olsen, he's up for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. I mean, if you wanted anybody who's important, they were here at Radio Row today. Neil Smith, longtime defensive end, is standing directly behind me right now. So it's been a lot of fun. It's taken a lot of work for everyone involved to make this broadcast, these broadcasts this week, a success. From Arnie and Rich to me to Aaron back in the studio to intern Logan and intern Nathan. We got all kinds of people involved, and we appreciate you and your continued support here of our Super Bowl week efforts. Again, it should be a great game. And Brian Baldinger, again, he's sitting to our right. He's going to come on here in a minute from the NFL Network. But people are – this is exactly what I thought was going to happen. Early in the week, people said, got to go Patriots. Love Brady, love Belichick, can't pick against him. Now, as the week continues on, people are telling themselves the Eagles have a chance, and they're buying in to Nick Foles. I mean, that's how people are feeling right now. The more this week has gone on, the more Eagles hype there has been. And let me tell you something else. The more I started thinking about Tom Brady and just how impressive it would be if he won. I mean, think about all of the things that Brady is defying potentially this year if he wins the Super Bowl. Now, we know about, you know, winning a Super Bowl at 40. We with that narrative, we've heard. Do you remember that Tom Brady challenged the Madden curse in the summer? Tom Brady is on the cover of this year's Madden video game, and I don't remember the exact number, but it's like 65% or more of people who have been on the Madden video game have either fallen off a cliff skill-wise or gotten injured shortly after or instantly after being on Madden. From Vince Young to Sean Alexander to Donovan McNabb.
Peyton Hillis.
Peyton Hillis, who no one's ever heard of after his stint on Madden. I mean, these are the people that have been on the cover of Madden. Not only is Tom Brady probably going to win the MVP, he'd win a Super Bowl and stare in the face of the biggest curse in sports, with the exception of the Sports Illustrated curse and the curse of the Billy Goat, which the Cubs recently broke also when they won the World Series. So if Tom Brady wins, I mean, he's defying the Madden curse, which now almost nobody has been able to. Odell Beckham Jr. was on Madden recently. He's been hurt. Gronk's been hurt. All these people that have been on Madden have been hurt. Aaron, pull up the list of Madden cover athletes. We've done this before, but I want to refresh. Michael Vick, there's another one. Got in trouble with the law. Also was injured. That was back in 2004. Marshall Faulk, I think, is one of the only ones that comes to my mind that was on Madden and didn't fall off a cliff right away. Now, he was older when he was on Madden, but he didn't end up getting hurt from it. Aaron, you got the list of Madden cover athletes?
I got a list from least to most cursed.
All right, well, see if you can pull them up by year, because I want to test my knowledge and see how much I can go. So let me know when you've got that. Another thing, though, about Brady that shocks me, not shocks me, but just shocks me of the league, Brady is attempting to be the first quarterback in NFL history to lead the league in passing and win a Super Bowl in the same year. No quarterback has ever led the league in passing and won the Super Bowl. Brady led the league in passing in 07, lost to the Giants. All the years, Manning led the league in passing, never won the Super Bowl. He didn't He didn't lead the league in passing his last year in Denver. He didn't lead the league in passing in 06 when in Indianapolis. He led the league in passing when Denver got shellacked by Seattle. Drew Brees, for all the years that he's led the league in passing, he didn't lead it in 09 when the Saints won the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers has won a Super Bowl, has never led the league in passing. So Tom Brady's attempting to defy Father Time and win a Super Bowl in his 40s. He's trying to defy the Madden curse, and he is trying to defy the curse of being the league's leading passer. And somebody might be rolling their eyes and saying, oh, Brady, does this stuff really matter? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's all just coincidental. But you know what? Tom Brady breaking these deeply held mantras that people have and these rules, I think they all continue to matter at this point. Champlain Valley Game Night here, live from Radio Row. Thanks to our friends at Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales. Aaron, we got that list yet, or am I just going to try to go from memory?
We do.
All right, well, let's see. 2000 was John Madden himself.
Yep.
2001 was Eddie George.
Yep.
2002 was Dante Culpepper.
Yep.
And Dante Culpepper did suffer a serious injury shortly after being on Madden. Marshall Faulk, 2003.
Yep.
2004 was Michael Vick.
This is incredible, yeah.
2005 was Sean Alexander.
Nope.
Okay, the 2005 was either Donovan McNabb or Ray Lewis. I think Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis.
So Ray Lewis was still good. Ray Lewis never got... He beat the Madden curse. Now, people don't like Ray Lewis for a lot of other reasons, but that stuff that you hate Ray Lewis for, you know, the alleged night in Atlanta, that happened well before he was on Madden. So 06, that was McNabb.
That was.
He got hurt, and he got hurt badly. I think it was an ACL tear. 07 was Alexander.
It was.
Now, that was longer, deeper in his career, but he fell off a cliff right after. Now, this is where it starts getting more tricky because... Around 08 is when we started seeing PS3 get involved, and there was Xbox, so certain guys were on different covers. So at this point, it all starts to run together for me. 08, let's see. Well, let's work backwards. I know in the recent present, Aaron, I know we've had Gronk. I know we've had Brady. I know we've had Odell Beckham.
Yep.
Calvin Johnson was on 1 year.
He wasn't the next one after Odell, though, going back.
Okay, so
you like this guy a lot.
I like this guy a lot.
Yeah, because he's on your team.
Oh, Richard Sherman's been on it.
Yep, that was Richard Sherman.
There was a combo where it was like Troy Polamalu and Larry Fitzgerald, but that might have only been on like one game system.
Let me look. It's showing it here. It's what year?
That would have had to have been like 11 or something.
Close. 2010.
Yeah, so, all right, what are the rest?
2011 is...
Peyton Hillis.
Nope. It's Drew Brees.
Drew Brees, okay.
Peyton Hillis is 2012.
Okay.
Calvin Johnson is 2013. And then 2014 was shared by Adrian Peterson and Barry Sanders.
Adrian, okay, so that was like a 25th anniversary collector's item or something like that.
Yeah.
All right, so... Brady attempting to beat them. Listen to those athletes. Beckham, McNabb, Sherman. They've all been hurt since having been on Madden, and Brady has it. All right. Sitting down with us now, though, in a second. He's coming over here. Brian Baldinger is going to sit with us. Brian, right here. Brian Baldinger talking with us from the NFL Network. All right. Welcome back right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Live at Radio Row, and we found ourselves Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network. Baldy, love your work. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's good to be here. This is always like the highlight of the whole media week is Thursday. So it's getting crowded in here. A lot of good players. I just saw Marshawn Lattimore, who I named my Rookie of the Year. And he's very appreciative of that. So it's a good time right now.
I'm going to ask you a total nerd question first. But at the end of the week last week, you put out a tweet that I spent 15 minutes talking about the Patriots and how they're utilizing the kickoff rules to their advantage. I thought it was fascinating because I thought more teams would be doing it. Explain it.
Well, they led the league in kickoff returns this year.
Against them.
Yeah, they had 53 kickoff returns. The next closest team was 42. So what they do is they aren't ready to concede the 25-yard line on a touchback.
Mm-hmm.
So unless it's a really good returner. where they might, you know, it might be a real challenge. But if it's an average return or a guy that's just okay at it, they're going to put the ball in play and let Matt Slater and their coverage team goes down there and see if they can trap him inside the 25. So the final two kickoffs at the Jacksonville return, you know, they were to the 16-yard line. They gained 90 yards of field position. So they're really good at that, and they were good at it against Atlanta last year, where they'll kick the ball right to the goal line with good hang time, and then they'll cover the kick.
Pretty amazing, because the NFL did what they did to try to limit returns for player safety. But really, if you do what the Patriots are doing, you're increasing more returns. I mean, it's tough.
Well, it's tough if you have a kicker that understands it.
Yeah.
And they can do it, you know, and Stefan Gostkowski is pretty good at it. So, but they also believe in their coverage teams. And, you know, because the rules say, you know, touchback 25, you know, let's just start the game right here. Patriots are like, well, what if we could start it at the 14 or the 16 or the 19? We're going to fight over every yard for you. It's a smart play by them.
When you're watching tape, what's the thing that has you most intrigued about Super Bowl 52?
Just the uncertainty about what the Patriots are going to do. I feel pretty certain what the Eagles are going to do. They don't change that much defensively. They believe in what they do. They have good players that do it. But the Patriots really can morph week in, week out. And so I'm just anxious to see what the Patriots are going to do to try and take either the defensive line away in their pressure, what they're going to do to the running backs of the Eagles. I'm anxious because we're going to see something that we haven't seen all year. So that's what I'm anxious to see.
Biggest question people have for the Patriots are they going to try to run the ball against that Eagles front four? Are they going to let Brady just throw it 50 times? What do you think the best course of action is?
Well, I think they'll balance it up, but I think it's the way that they run it. I think they can still run it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, the Eagles are really good at resetting the line of scrimmage. They attack the line of scrimmage. They play the run on the way to the quarterback. So I think, you know, how you run it, whether it's toss crack, whether it sweeps away from that front, I think that's kind of how they're going to do it.
Offensively, we hear a lot about the Eagles' run-pass option. How can that counteract the Pats' defense?
Well, you can't win a game running run-pass options, but it's a way to move the chains. It's another form of play action. Like, all those things are in place. It's a way to get pretty safe completions for Nick Foles. He's completing 77% of his passes in these two playoff games. So that's a really high number. I think that's what it does, and I think Nick is really good at making that read.
Eagles have four running backs that can give the Patriots problems. Do we see the most out of Jay Ajayi, LeGarrette Blount, or other on Sunday?
I think you'll see Jay Ajayi. I think he'll be the lead back. I think in the screen game he's been really good. They've thrown a lot of different types of screens in the postseason. 14 completions have been behind the line of scrimmage. Like, that's all in play. But I think Jay Ajayi is going to be the lead dog in this thing. I think it was basically a one-year rental. I don't know that he'll be here long-term, but I think they wanted a better back that could be an every-down back, and that's what they have.
What do you make of just how crazy the quarterback market's going to be this offseason? We've already seen it this week with Alex Smith, and now the ramifications on Kirk Cousins and others.
Well, the quarterback carousel always drives the free agent market and drives the offseason conversation. So obviously that has started already. But we haven't really seen a guy like Kirk Cousins on the free agent market, you know. And so is Drew Brees on the free agent market, you know. And we haven't really seen anything like that. Is Nick Foles on the free agent market? I mean, we don't know yet. So there's going to be some guys that are going to be in play with teams that have made it clear, you know, whether it's Denver right now, that they're in that market. The Jets, are they in that market? Would Jacksonville jump into the market for the right guy? It's going to, you know, and then we have a bunch of quarterbacks that are going to be first-round picks in the NFL. So it's going to drive the conversation as soon as this game ends.
Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, you got a prediction on the game, or you wait until Friday for that?
Oh, no, I'm fine with that. I made my prediction as soon as the championship Sunday ended. I live in Philadelphia. I watched every game that this Eagles team has played. I have all the respect in the world for Patriots, but I think the Eagles are a better team. And I think they'll win this game, you know, by a slim margin, 27-24, something like that.
Now, real quick, you told me you've actually been up in the Burlington area. Yeah, it was a pretty good story I heard off air. You got to tell our listeners on air.
Well, my first girlfriend went to St. Joseph's up there in Winooski, Vermont, not far from Burlington. So I made a few treks up there in my day. I went up to Montreal and stopped through Burlington on the way back, you know, bound into New York. So I know my way through that snow country.
Well, if you come up again, we'll take you out for a lovely craft beer.
I would love that. I know it's what they're for.
That's Brian Baldinger with us here on Radio Row. Yeah, funny story there about Baldy coming up to Burlington and hanging out in Winooski. So that's fun as well. I told you, Aaron, I just said it before Baldy came on. As this week has gone on, it has seemed like more and more people are transitioning to the Eagles, and Baldy's one of them.
Yeah, man. I mean, their line on offense and their front are very imposing, and it does give me a start as a Pats fan.
Look, I like the Eagles too, and I picked against the Patriots one game this entire season. We will make our official predictions tomorrow. I have only picked against the Patriots one time this year. I picked against them when they played the Chargers. I thought they were going to lose to the Chargers at home, and the reason why was experienced quarterback wasn't going to be intimidated by Gillette. Also, the fearsome twosome that the Chargers had on the defensive line at that time in Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. I thought the Chargers were going to come in, and because they could run the ball with Melvin Gordon, I thought they were coming into Foxborough and were going to beat the Patriots. And what was like, it was in October. It was the end of October, so probably week 7, week 9, somewhere in that regard. I am feeling the same way about this Eagles team right now that I felt about that Chargers team. I think they have a real chance. I don't have my official prediction out yet, but we'll find that out tomorrow along with Richard. We know what Arnie's picking. He's picking against the Patriots because he always picks against the Patriots, and that should make you happy. So I think, though, with those four running backs that this team has in Philadelphia, I think they can keep the Patriots on their toes. I do like the run-pass option. I've said it from the start. I love how the Eagles in that run-pass option can get the field shifting laterally, and Baldy just told us there, it's another way to incorporate play action into your offense. I like what the Eagles do. If they can get pressure on Tom Brady with four, and they can sit back in coverage. Now, I did see an interesting stat today on this. Tom Brady is 0-2 in Super Bowls when pressured 40% or more of the time. When he's been pressured on 40% of his dropbacks or more, he's 0-2 in Super Bowls. I have a couple questions on that stat. First and foremost, how many quarterbacks that have been pressured 40% of the time have actually won Super Bowls? That's what I would like to know. I mean, are quarterbacks all time 0-10? Are they 10-2? And Brady are the only losses. I want to know that stat. But it still goes to show you that even as simple as it sounds, and as many times as it's been said, if you can get pressure on Brady, then you've got a chance to win this game. 40% of the time, the Giants were able to do in 7-11, and they won. Jacksonville, for a contrary, for as good as their defense is in the AFC Championship game, 28% of the time is what they got to Brady, which was like their second lowest percentage of the entire season. So the Patriots' offensive line is schematically under Josh McDaniels. They have figured out a way to neutralize a team's pass rush. Champlain Valley Game Night live from Radio Row here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Thanks to Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales, 3 miles east of Richmond, off Route 2 in Jonesville. Hey, Aaron, big day for you and your family, I hear, back in the studio.
It sure is. It's my dad's birthday. So Paul Wells, if you're listening, just wanted to say, man, happy birthday. Happy 47th.
Happy birthday, Paul Wells. Thanks for letting your son be in the studio for the entire week, all hours of the day. He has been invaluable. And with all the money he's making this week, being in the studio, Paul Wells, make sure that Aaron takes you out to a nice dinner. When we come back, Myron Medcalf is going to sit down with us. You hear him on ESPN Radio. You see him on ESPN. He's a college basketball insider. What does he think of Duke landing three of the top five recruits for next year? But really, are they talking about the Catamounts inside the walls at Bristol? Myron Medcalf next from Radio Row at 101.3 ESPN.
Brady is live on Radio Row in Minneapolis at Super Bowl 52. Who's he going to talk to next? Keep listening to 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com, live at Radio Row. We've made it past the halfway point here, counting down towards another Patriots Super Bowl appearance. We are a Patriots affiliate. I'm telling our guests here, Myron Medcalf of ESPN. You hear him on ESPN Radio. He's all over the college scene, especially college basketball. Myron, how are you?
Doing well, man. This is wild.
This is Radio Row. This is nuts, isn't it? How many Radio Rows have you been to?
This is my first. This is my first one. I'm just doing Final Four, do that, but this is a little different deal here, man. This is wild.
What's the thing that surprised you about Radio Row?
Well, it's kind of tight. It's kind of a tight fit, but it's always cool to see Hall of Famers, like like that's Terrell Davis back there. I mean, just like guys you grew up watching, and it's just cool, man, to be a part of it, man.
The most surprising thing to me so far that I've seen this week has been Travis Kelce's matching denim suit.
Yeah, yeah, and he had an entourage too, man. He had like eight people with him. You always know somebody's important based on how many people they have
people
with them. So like advice I would give to people is like come through here with like 10 people. Like you might not even be famous, but I guarantee people will want to talk.
How many people you got following you?
No, it's just me right now, but next time I'm going to come through with about 7 people.
So Myron, I told Doug Kazarian, who does a lot of work on ESPN Radio for College Hoop and College Football also, I talked to him earlier, and I said, how much love are you guys giving University of Vermont Hoops when we start talking mid-major bubble, mid-major sleepers? Tell me you're talking about UVM a little bit.
Oh, we will. You know, I mean, the challenge with, like, the mid-majors is it's so much harder for them to get attention because now that you have, like, really 7 power leagues, like, you can make the case that the American is a power league, the Big East, I mean, A-10, you know, in good years, the Mountain West in good years, and then you have the West Coast Conference. So it's getting harder and harder for schools like the Vermonts to get that notoriety. But I'm a former Glenn fan. I know, man, I was my guy back in the day. And I think it's also cool that in March, when people are watching the conference tournaments, you get a lot of that love. So I'll be on it, man, if they're one of the teams that are ready to dance.
Let's talk about Trey Young. Trey Young's the freshman from Oklahoma. Dude is lighting the nation up in terms of scoring. A lot of our audience might not have watched him up in Burlington. How good is Trey Young?
You know, I spent like 3 or 4 days with Trey Young last week, man. He's as good as advertised, if not better.
Really?
Steph Curry, I guess, is the best comparison. When you look at his shooting, I honestly think his mobility and his ability to get to the basket is very John Wall-like, Russell Westbrook-like. He's just smooth in every aspect. Like, he's going to kill it in the NBA because he draws so many fouls, great free throw shooter, he can shoot threes. He's also such a good leader, smart passes. Like the hype sometimes, I mean, I've been in this game long enough to hear everybody got a Steph Curry. I mean, you call any AAU coach, you call an AAU coach in Vermont right now, and he'll tell me he has a kid who's got a little Steph Curry. It's usually an exaggeration, but Trae Young's the real deal, man.
How about his ability to play defense at the next level? Because I played against Jimmer Fredette in high school, and I followed Jimmer subsequently, and the knock on him was, dude could score at will, too slow to play defense. How's Trae Young's defensive game? Because that's something that draws a lot of attention at the next level.
He's got to work on it, but I mean, we all know that the NBA is an offensive league.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, a good example is a team here, Minnesota Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns, one of the best players, I think, in the league, all-star this year, was never a good defensive player. You add Jimmy Butler to the mix, and all of a sudden, they're a better defensive team. So I think Trey will go to a team that has some guys who are really good on that side of the ball, really good defensively, and I think he'll continue to improve. But you'll love Trey Young based on what he can do with the basketball in his hands. That is his greatest asset and gift.
Myron Metcalf of ESPN with us here, Radio Row, inside the Mall of America. Here as we're counting down towards Super Bowl 52. Man, Duke is fascinating to me. This year, I love watching Marvin Bagley play. I think he is so good. Gary Trent, these guys are awesome. And then they just landed 3 of the top 5 recruits in the country for next year. What is Coach K selling here?
He's selling all those rings. He's selling.
Coach Cal's not a big fan of it, though.
No, hey, let me tell you something. The greatest thing that Coach K has done, this may sound really crazy, it's not the right below the rings, I'll say, is extending his career another decade in the one and done era. Who could have ever predicted that?
Yeah.
So many older coaches have not adapted to this generation and don't really know how to relate to these kids, how to get them. And now Coach K is the one and done king. I think he's selling the legacy. I think he's selling winning. I think he's selling life after basketball with so many successful guys who've come out of that program. Look at whether it's Jay Will on TV or Grant Hill owning part of the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, there's so many stories of guys who've done great after basketball. He's killing it, man. And that team next year is going to be ridiculous.
How good is this Zion Williamson? I watched, you know, the mixtapes, the YouTube highlights. I've seen the dunks and stuff. How good a player is he?
Just imagine if Sean Kemp could shoot threes, you know, and had a mid-range game and could bring the ball up. He's just unique. I mean, people see the highlights.
Yeah.
But he's LeBron physically in that. don't care who you are at the next level, there aren't going to be many guys who can do that, who can handle him, who can deal with a guy with that kind of strength. He's above the rim. He's aggressive. He's going to be able to guard, I think, two or three spots at the next level, if not more. And he's a highlight reel, man. So he's everything I think you would want in a young talent. He's going to kill it at Duke.
Yeah. We're talking about some of the positives in college hoop right now. Let's go to a couple of the negatives. What do you think ultimately happens to Tom Izzo at Michigan State? I know it's extremely complex. It's also extremely early. So maybe it's unfair to say what happens to him, but I mean, how deep down the rabbit hole are we going here?
Nothing would surprise me at this point.
Yeah.
Just because if Rick Pitino can get fired, knowing what he survived and the pull he had at A University, Tom Izzo's not immune. And I think right now, it's so much bigger than Tom Izzo. And I think he's had some missteps in his press conferences.
Yeah.
Now, he can't talk. The school is saying, legally, don't say a word.
Right.
We are up against legal ramifications. People don't care about that. They want to hear him talk. So I could see a scenario where he becomes part of the solution and he sticks around, but I could certainly see a scenario where you find out Tom Izzo isn't here after this season, because this thing is so much bigger than a coach or a team. And when things like this happen, a lot of times you eradicate the whole culture, change everything.
You know, it's ironic you said that somewhere everyone will tell you, I got a guy who's kind of like Steph Curry. I feel like I could show you a parent that's kind of like LeVar Ball at every town in this country. What do you make of the whole, not even so much just LeVar, but what do you make of his kids being in Lithuania and all that? Is that good for them? Is it just good for him? Should they be at UCLA? What do you think of the whole situation, I guess?
Listen, everybody has an uncle who at the wedding, at the barbecue, you know he's going to show out, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually you just kind of ignore him.
Yeah.
Because you're like, Uncle Joe saying crazy stuff again. This is Uncle Joe with TV shows and cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, that's who LeVar Ball is. I think he loves those kids, man. Lithuania is a bad move, but it's good for the brand, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing with him is Big Ball, the brand, will do better because of it. But basketball, they're not getting better over there. But I don't think they care about basketball at this point. So,
we'll get you out of here on this. One of the things, you know, we started off the conversation talking about the University of Vermont. And they went 16-0 in the league last year. They haven't lost inside the America East Conference since February of 2016. We're working on nearly 30 consecutive wins in the league. So some people are saying, dude, they should move up conferences. And I'm like, no, let's enjoy what we've got here and try to build a powerhouse in the America East. Where's your stance on schools moving up? Just because, you know, look, this is relative success over the last decade, but we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about one tournament win back in 2005. I think they should stay where they're at.
Call Nebraska football.
Yeah, exactly. Call Rutgers.
Have a conversation with Nebraska football about moving up and changing leagues and thinking it's going to change everything. You know, Wichita State is in the American right now. They're seeing it.
Yeah.
They went down to Houston and got their tails kicked. That's a Wichita State team that would beat everybody in the Missouri Valley by 20.
Yeah.
They went down to Houston with some real dudes, got punched in the face. If you have a path to the NCAA tournament and you can be successful with what you're doing, and you have a fan base and you have support, why change it? You only make a change, in my opinion, if it's really going to dramatically alter what you're able to do now.
Yeah.
If there's something that's stopping you and you're Vermont, I get it. But are you going to move to another league and suddenly get five-star kids? No. So you're always going to have to develop talent. Like, that's your gift. Why leave a league when you're dominating that?
And the other thing that's crazy is that they don't have a new arena yet. They're finally getting to the point where they're going to start building a new arena. But you can't move. They're playing in a glorified high school gym. You can't move up conferences until that arena is built, established, and the recruits have followed it. We're a decade away from moving up a league, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and talk to Northwestern about a new arena. Right now, they're playing in Allstate Arena. It's not their home venue while their home court's being renovated. They've lost a ton of fans.
Yeah.
It's changed the vibe. Like, I love old school Northwestern, you know, when it felt like a high school gym. I just think
College basketball is the only sport where you can win 50 different ways. You might have a team that has a bunch of seniors who can shoot the three. You might have a squad that recruits a bunch of five stars. You might have a team that recruits a bunch of guys who develop into something bigger. There's so many ways to win in college basketball. It's not football. So I think if you have a brand that works, and Vermont definitely does, I wouldn't change that unless you were really prepared to make the move, because there are a lot of teams that thought that they were going to make the right move and change everything, and it didn't.
We'll get you out of here on this last one, because now this spurred my mind again. There's been talks of this, so I don't know how close we are to this happening, but of getting rid of the rule that says you have to sit out a year if you transfer. Now that, it might be good for the individual kids. It's awful for your mid-level programs like Vermont that I think just become feeder systems like junior college currently is. What's your take on that?
Vermont can't stop what's happening now. The schools like that, they can't stop the grad transfers. That's their biggest threat,
yeah,
is kids graduating and transfer. I think immediate eligibility helps Vermont.
Really?
That you're going to get the kid who's playing at Villanova right now, 3 minutes a game, and he's going to see Vermont winning and go, I could be the star on that team.
Yeah, that's true.
Kedrick Nunn at Oakland, who's number two in the country right now in scoring, played at Illinois, you know, was a good player there, and now he's fighting for the scoring title. I just think it's a good rule overall. Stop blocking these kids from pursuing their dreams. We don't do it to coaches. Everybody overall, I think, would benefit, because kids would be where they actually want it to be. It's kind of crazy to expect a 17-year-old, 16-year-old to make a great life decision,
yeah,
and not have not second-guess himself, right?
Yeah.
But that's what we're asking these college kids to do. I think it's unfair.
Myron Metcalf, ESPN College Hoops expert. You can see him on ESPN. You can hear him on ESPN Radio. Man, we appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me, man.
There he goes, Myron Metcalf on Radio Row. And, you know, look, Arnie had said this maybe about 2 weeks ago when we first talked about the idea of this rule. And this is one that maybe I'm willing to change my mind on, because I have thought forever that if you took away the instant eligibility from, or if you took away the requirement to sit out a year, that you would get kind of this lawless, wild, wild west mentality, especially when you start talking about kids that want to stay in school for 4 years. But, you know, and look, if they graduate, great. And if they don't graduate, then, you know, they'll go play overseas and it doesn't matter potentially. But maybe you'll get these. I've always thought that, you know, because I know, because I coached at junior college. I've seen this where if you needed, just say, at our baseball team, if we needed 10 guys, we had to recruit 20 guys. Why? Because someone's going to have a great year and they're going to leave after 1 year. And someone's going to transfer to a bigger junior college. And someone's going to flunk out, because that happens at junior college. And somebody is going to be academically ineligible for part of the season. You need more guys coming into your program. How unfair is it to John Becker if he brings in an Anthony Lamb and, you know, because he's got Anthony Lamb, he doesn't go recruit a small forward for next year? Then what happens? Then Anthony Lamb leaves and you've got a small forward. You know, Anthony Lamb leaves, you don't have a small forward. Now you're short rostered players. Conversely, what happens if you bring in a high school kid? You start just over-recruiting now. Well, you know, we don't know who's going to stay and who's going to leave, so we'll bring in five extra guys. Well, then what happens? Then everybody stays, and all these kids that were promised, they have a role on this roster, they don't have it anymore. They get redshirted. They get cut entirely because we anticipated kids were going to leave. That is why I have hated the idea of this rule forever. The only thing that you can tell me that makes this even remotely okay to me is what Myron Metcalf just said and what Arnie has said. Your teams might get better because you are going to get. Look, I've been so worried about the guys like Anthony Lamb. Well, what if they play great and go to UConn? Well, what about the kid at UConn who's disgruntled about a lack of playing time and he wants to come in? That might give your mid-major schools some more star power, like the kid he talked about at Oakland, who is, you know, battling it out with Trey Young of Oklahoma for the scoring title this season. But I still, you can convince me there's a positive aspect to it for the team and for the kids individually, but I don't know that it's good for programs overall. Yes, if Vermont landed a great player from Villanova, then yes, for a 2 to 3 to 4 year span, you could have a phenomenal player. But I think ultimately there's more damage that comes with this than there is good. And I'm sorry that people think, well, Brandon, you're trying to block the kids potentially. Yeah, I am, because I want the programs to be protected. And I want the programs to be protected because I've seen what this lawless nature does to programs. Okay, when I worked at Misericordia University, small Division III Catholic school, that's where I worked after Norwich. I coached baseball there. And there were 40 guys. They recruited a 40-man roster every year. Every single year. And that means they were recruiting 15 to 20 new players every year. Why? Because athletics was solely used as a admissions thing. You know, $40,000 a year in school. They're all going to come and pay to go there. Who cares if the teams are good? We've got as big a rosters as we can. So the campus was littered with athletes who had been fed broken promises. They've been fed lies, and I hated it. It's part of the reason why I didn't like working there, because it was just so shady. Okay, the campus was full of high school all-stars and all-league players that were told, hey, come to Misericordia, you're going to get a chance to play. And then they were cut, or they were third string, and they were unhappy because of all the over-recruiting. Do I want to start over-recruiting to Vermont because I think I have to for fear that I might lose players? Do I want to start over-recruiting and then have a kid want to come in, and now I've got 20 players that want to play in my program, and I'm going to go and cut a kid that I promised his parents would be here for 4 years? I don't know that I want to walk down that road. No, no, no. I don't want to walk down that road. Champlain Valley Game Night, live from Radio Row. Mike Golic Jr., first and last, and Golic and Wingo next. Radio Row, 101.3 ESPN.
Brady is live on Radio Row in Minneapolis at Super Bowl 52. Who's he going to talk to next? Keep listening to 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back here live at Radio Row again, day four. Thanks to our friends at Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales. And sitting down with us, a guy you hear on the station every morning on First and Last is the host there. Also is one of three voices on Golic and Wingo. It's Mike Golic Jr. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me.
Well, last time we spoke, last year, you told us what a big Bachelor fan you were.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to ask, are you breaking down more tape of the game or catching up on more Bachelor?
Well, yeah, catch up is the key word. I'm a couple weeks behind right now in this current season, so seeing what Ari's working with, but we've got some major star potential, and Crystal is the villain filling that Olivia Cardelli role, and you always need those types in a season. You build in a lot of similar drama, but everyone's got their own flavor, so I feel good promise with this season. I'm just a little bit behind right now, and I blame sports for getting in the way of my other life.
Where did this become the guilt? I don't even know if it's a guilty pleasure. It's an outward pleasure, yes, for you. Where did it become such a passion for you?
Yeah, you know what? It was one of those things that it was a girl I talked to that I still end up dating now, but it was one of the things that she was interested in. So I was like, all right, I'll find my way into this common interest. Everyone's kind of got to make some sacrifices in the reality TV vein. The irony is, she didn't watch it that much anymore. I ended up sticking with it. So I am over here on an island by myself now, just enjoying my Bachelor fandom for what it is. It's truly become just normal fandom.
When are you going to make a weekend trip up to Burlington? Because that's the one thing you said last year that you hadn't done yet.
I know. I still have to get that on the dock. And I'm thinking I wait till the summer,
yes,
get it now after seeing, because I know how different lives can be for places. Minnesota is the perfect example. I've been out here in the summer, done Lake Minnetonka. It's beautiful. Did the ice fishing yesterday. It is two lives here, so I'd like to live the summer life for Burlington.
Yeah, you were ice fishing with Katie Nolan. How did that go?
It went really well. So I, like in my Twitter life, like in everything else, I'm a volume shooter. I was out there. I probably caught, in all seriousness, like 15 fish. They were crappie. They were small. Katie Nolan goes big or goes home. We are sitting there, and it's nearing the end. And to her credit, they were going to game it. They were going to say, you know what? We've got this nice, you know, big fish over in the cooler we caught earlier. We can hook it on one of you guys and have you reel it up like you caught a monster. And Katie said, she's like, no, you know, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to do this honestly. And not 2 minutes later, she gets the biggest bite, and it ends up being probably a 3-pound white bass, and was the catch of the day by far.
And you were out there with your dad too, so were you guys drinking beer on the ice?
Oh, I mean, listen, there's no way you're getting us out there if we were going to have to be sober the entire time. So it was the perfect combination. We could have stayed there all day. I mean, they had to drag us out of there to come back and actually do work after.
Mike Golic Jr. with us of ESPN right here on Radio Row inside the Mall of America. What's your impressions of the Mall of America? Have you left the third floor at all?
I have. So I've been been down.
Oh, Kula Kawingo's on the second floor.
Kula Kawingo's over at the Hard Rock, so I've gotten to walk through there a couple of times. I've obviously explored a little bit. Now, I've been to the Mall of America before. I've yet to be on the rides because, again, nothing opens until 10 a.m., so usually by that time, we have finished Kula Kawingo, and I'm trying to move on to whatever's coming next. I'm going to try and set some time aside, get over on the log ride, maybe hit a merry-go-round. I feel like I can't come to a place that's got an amusement park indoors and just leave it on the field.
Well, you missed the media party on Tuesday. That was fun, seeing all the drunk radio hosts riding the rides as the night was ending at like 11 p.m. Drunk roller coasters. That's what you missed on Tuesday.
Wow. When you put it like that, it really hits home. I'm upset, too, because I heard about that media party after the fact. I don't know where the invite is, if that got lost in the mail, if that was something that was supposed to be delivered by carrier pigeon to me, but I got to talk to someone, maybe my agent, before next year. I can't miss more drunken debauchery with the rest of the radio crowd.
So, on to the game here. Patriots Station affiliate, but a lot of Eagle fans in our area. I feel like as the week started, everyone was like, well, I can't bet against Brady and Belichick. As the week has gone on, I'm starting to see more people saying the Eagles are the better team. The Eagles, I like what they do offensively. Defensively, they've got the personnel to match up with New England. How do you read it right now?
Yeah, it's one of those, I think we do this over the course of weeks, especially when the Patriots are such a known commodity. Because right now with the Eagles, we're trying to convince ourselves to buy in off one good game from Nick Foles.
Yeah.
We remember the rest of his starts since Carson Wentz went down have been, for the most part, really, really underwhelming. There were some real stinkers built in there. And we're hoping that this is some inclination, some bit of a callback to that 27-2 ratio season. I just don't see it. The Patriots offensively are good enough. We saw them lose probably their best offensive player outside of Tom last week or 2 weeks ago and still keep going, use Amendola and those guys to exploit the middle of the field. And then defensively, they're good enough where you need them to be, down in the red zone. It's a great top five scoring defense in the league. And ultimately, I think when you just pair it in the right areas, again, football, it's so situational. They game those situational areas better than anyone.
The Patriots are going to lose Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels at the end of the year. You played the game. How big a deal is it to lose both your top lieutenants if you're Bill Belichick and if you're Tom Brady?
Yeah, listen, I think it's a very big deal. The last time it happened for the Patriots when Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss left, they were still in the playoffs, so it feels disingenuous, but that was about a 10-year drought between that and their next Lombardi trophy. So yeah, it's a big deal, and I think right now especially, we see a lot of the stuff coming out, the Patriots and the Kraft family giving Tom Brady that vote of confidence, basically saying he can call his shot when he wants to shut this down. We're not going to force him out the way we have others. That indicates to me, all right, if you're Bill Belichick, how much control of this do you have going forward? How comfortable are you facing the unknown whenever it comes without the guy that you clearly felt comfortable enough with to keep around as long as you did in Jimmy Garoppolo?
The 30 for 30 tonight comes out on, yes, Bill Belichick and his relationship with Bill Parcells. We've got the director on, or we had the director on a little while ago. I'm pumped for it. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet, no. So I had the advanced screener built in there, but getting down here, haven't quite had the time. But I think for me, coming off of what we saw in the article that was posted about Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, a guy who,
yeah,
he was sort of the next level mentor to with during their time, certainly in Cleveland, but other points across the way where they met up. Just seeing the way that coaches that similar personality types that have enjoyed success, what the commonalities are, what they brought to the table, learn from each other, and take away now in their separate spots, but where you can still see, all right, these are the clear reasons why this tree succeeds.
Have you gotten a chance to eat a Juicy Lucy yet in Minnesota?
No, I haven't, and I feel like I really like let myself down and my bloodline down.
They had them in the media workroom yesterday.
Wow.
So you missed out the drunk roller coasters and the free Juicy Lucy's.
I am doing the Super Bowl radio row all sorts of wrong right now. It's alarming. So this is good, though. You've alerted me to all these things. Now we can be part of the change.
You know, I asked Doug Kazarian, SportsCenter host, this yesterday, and I'm going to ask you, what's like, it's not a hot take, but like, what's like the one take that no one's going to change your opinion of? Like, what's like the one thing you're going to fall on the sword of? Like, mine is, I think Dwight Howard and Blake Griffin are the most overrated basketball players of my generation. That's like the one thing you're not going to convince me of otherwise. What's something you've got that no one's going to change your mind
on? I think the original Rocky movie is the most overrated sports movie of all time.
Really?
Yes. I think in the Rocky franchise, it's a third at best.
Wow.
In that one, behind Rocky IV and Rocky III. I think a lot of the usual things that people use to defend it, like the Academy Award noms and its place there, are all a little bit overblown. I think as a love story, it kind of falls flat. I didn't really buy into a lot of it, so that's the one I consist constantly go to battle with my dad over.
Golic and Wingo now, and it's about 2.5 months in. Man, we're liking it up in Burlington. And what have you guys tried to do to keep it, you know, similar enough to Mike and Mike to hold some of the old listeners, but new enough to give it some new energy?
Yeah, well, I think it's just that, trying to bring energy, especially in my role. I get to go over there the first hour of the morning, and for me, I'm rolling off first and last. So I've gone 2 hours by myself in a room just spewing takes, but I've had time to sort of whittle down. All right, what are the best points I want to make today? What are the things that I can bring in? And I just try and come in hot, because Dad and Trey are working into their start of their 4-hour show. So whatever life I can inject there, I think is good. We try and bring some fun social elements over from the show that I'm on in the morning, and just see if we can put a little shot of youth in there. Mike and Mike was a great show for so long. Goal at the Window is going to be a great show going forward as well. But, you know, everything can be a little bit better served, I think, with just another different perspective thrown in there, and that's what I try and provide.
And you also do the weekend observations with Stu Gatz. What's it like being around? Because we've talked to Stu Gatz a lot. He's hysterical. What's it like for you doing a show with him?
It's a learning experience. And meeting Stu Gatz, you know, a couple of years ago now was eye-opening, just because we obviously know the character that Stu Gatz is, but the amount that I've actually managed to learn in the school of broadcasting from Stu Gatz has been substantial. And he's been a guy that I've been fortunate to, you know, be able to call a mentor in this space, which is terrifying when you say that out loud, and women and children and my parents can hear that. But it really is just, it's, there's no limits on what we do on Sunday mornings, and that's unique in this space, where it can be at times a place where you're trying to get all the reads in, you're trying to get everyone paid up, you're trying to do right by. We just turn on the mics and we do whatever's going to make us and the audience laugh as hard as possible.
Well, we'll be walking around town and I'll see people come up to me who love Stu Gatz, and they'll just go like, Patriots, ding, Eagles, ding, Collision Course. And that's just their impression of Stu Gatz.
Exactly, yeah. Me, ding, Juicy Lucy, ding, Collision Course, hopefully in the next day or so.
And we'll get you out of here on this. It's always weird because I feel like I'm talking about my ex, but our buddy Ryan Matlack, who had this job before me, he hangs out with you on the regular, so any Matlack stories, because the viewers want to know.
Oh, no, listen, I keep telling everyone, I'm a steel trap. That overnight experience, the only way out is in a box. So what we do in the confines of that and in the immediacy after, I'm going to leave in the dark right now. So you guys are going to have to go somewhere else if you want to find a snitch. Cut this and let Matlack know I got his back.
Well, tell him we said hello.
Will do, definitely.
I love Mike Golic.
Oh, wow.
That's the ESPN higher-ups walking next to us. Thanks, Mike Golic Jr.
Great reviews. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Mike Golic Jr. Hey, we are out of time. Day 4, Radio Row, it's over. We'll be back. Our final day, our predictions on Super Bowl 52, and a guest list that continues to amaze us. And we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks to Perfection Motorsports. As always, thanks to Aaron back in the studio. See you tomorrow, 101.3 ESPN.